KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Daly City, otherwise known as Little Manila.
Lower Hay.
Outer Richmond.
Fremont.
South of Market.
The Marina.
The E.
Tro Hill.
Coming up, how yesterday's vote will reshape the Bay Area.
It will be interesting to see what they do for their districts in the city now that they could have a pretty strong progressive majority in the Board of Supervisors.
Then we'll hear about filmmaker Sephora Wolde's new movie based in the Tenderloin.
It's kind of a throwback to this era where cab drivers did come to San Francisco. They did come to neighborhoods like the Tenderloin to figure it out.
And a man shares his experience escaping to the U.S. from San Salvador during a civil war.
So after I see that then Monsanto leaves without a job, I talk to her and say, listen, I'm going to the U.S.
Stay with us. Cross Currents is next. Well, it's a new day. Republicans no longer control all three branches of the government, and there's no doubt that makes the vast majority of registered voters in the state of California happy. Our team here at KALW was up late covering the election live, and we're back now to sort through the results. I'm joined by KALW election coordinator Angela Johnston and our news director, Ben Trefney. Hi, guys.
Hey, Hannah.
All right. So on Monday's Cross Currents, we started out with what you were most looking forward to on Election Day. Mm-hmm. And that was actually races taking place outside of the Bay Area.
That's right.
Yeah, like the District 10 race. That's near Modesto and areas just east of San Jose. And that's where a lot of Bay Area folks drove out to campaign and canvass since it was close in proximity to the Bay Area and had a really good chance of swinging left with this Democratic candidate, Josh Harder. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really close. It looks like the incumbent Republican Jeff Denham won with, can you believe it, 50.6% of the vote. That's just 1,287 votes over Josh Harder.
Close.
And because it's that close, it's called a close contest in the state, which means the state and the Secretary of State have until mid-December to kind of finally decide that and look at every single ballot that may still need to be counted.
Right. And as we wait on those final results, the House will definitely be majority Democrats, though. We're just waiting to see how blue it is.
Yeah. And of course, the Senate last night, too, nationally got a little more red. And since senators serve six-year terms as compared to two-year in the House, that's going to mean the Senate's likely to stay Republican for a while longer.
So let's turn now to the state propositions. There were 11 of them. What passed, Angela?
Okay, Prop 2, that issues bonds for housing people with mental illnesses, and Prop 4, that also issues bonds for private children's hospitals, and Prop 12, that regulates the confinement of farm animals. All of those passed easily with more than 60% yes votes.
And also this Prop 11, you know, that's the measure put on the ballot by ambulance companies to require paid on-call breaks. That passed. That one was really complicated because it has to do with a lawsuit, and it turned out ambulance workers themselves were against it, at least in an organized form, but they didn't put in a formal opposition in the guide in time, and so that might have influenced the way that vote turned out.
And it turns out most of California also wants permanent daylight saving time. Prop 7 also passed pretty easily. It'll now go to the legislature for a two-thirds vote to move forward.
And then if they pass that at the legislature, it's going to have to go to the federal government, which is going to provide a little more tension between California and the nation, which is, of course, what we've been living with for the last couple of years.
It'll just continue on. So now let's go to some of the state props that did not make it.
All right. Well, let me talk first about Prop 6. Mm-hmm. So that was the gas tax repeal. That one went down. That means that we're going to keep the gas tax that was recently established.
So that lost. Prop 8 lost, too. That would have put a cap on kidney dialysis clinics in California, and it was a tricky one. I know a lot of people were confused about it. Both sides were talking about patient health care, better patient health care. But it failed with over 60% no.
There was a lot of concern that that would just shut down a lot of the dialysis clinics. I think that kind of fear that was definitely put out there by the people who opposed that, that might have influenced it.
Right.
Right. No for Prop 5 as well. That would have allowed property owners to transfer their existing property taxes if they're over 55 and buy a new home in California. But independent analysis showed a big loss for schools.
Yeah, those are the echoes of the old Prop 13.
Right. And Prop 10, that would have repealed Costa-Hawkins, that was pretty heavily defeated, which may be surprising here in the Bay Area. San Franciscans actually voted for it, but only by a slim margin. Lots of money and attack ads were spent to defeat that one.
Yeah, and a lot of surprise about that one last night. Okay, so now let's talk about state races. Going into Election Day, Democrats were just short of holding a supermajority in the state Senate. So what happened there?
Well, the Sacramento Bee is projecting that Democrats regain that supermajority, and that's going to mean they could have near total control of the state government.
That's right. Former San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom, as we know, he took his next step up the political ladder. Yep. He'll replace Jerry Brown as governor of the Golden State. We'll see if that's the last rung he goes for. Mm-hmm. His fellow San Franciscan Nancy Pelosi retained her seat, and that, of course, is a really important one with the new House majority for Democrats. And Gavin Newsom's lieutenant governor will be Eleni Kounoulakis. His Secretary of State will be Alex Padilla. California's Comptroller will be Betty Yee. Javier Becerra, who has really taken on the federal government in a lot of ways over the last few years, will remain Attorney General. And Fiona Ma, who comes from my district, District 4 in San Francisco, will be the new Treasurer.
Mm-hmm. Another state race that caught our attention this year was the State Superintendent of Public Instruction. And I hadn't even heard of this position until this race, but it was the most expensive one on the ballot, and it was a really close one.
That's just amazing that they put so much money into the State Superintendent of Public Instruction.
Right. So Marshall Tuck, a former charter school executive, is narrowly ahead of Tony Thurmond. He's a state assembly member for District 15 in Alameda. And Thurmond hasn't conceded yet. He just tweeted earlier this morning that there's millions of ballots left to be counted and, quote, they're digging in and waiting for every vote.
And that's really interesting because Marshall Tuck, working with charter schools in the past, you know, he will be looking at education and maybe kind of leading the direction for the state, or at least suggesting it from a more charter first perspective. And I think that that's what this came down to, why there was so much money in this race, because it maybe came down from an argument between charter schools versus conventional schools that was really embodied by these two candidates. And you could see how close Californians feel about that because it's almost 50-50.
Mm-hmm. So we'll be paying attention to that. Thurmond's old seat in Alameda County was also hotly contested by two Democrats, former Obama aide Buffy Wicks and Richmond City Council member Jovanka Beckles. Wicks did win, but there was a lot of progressive excitement for Beckles.
She was endorsed by Bernie Sanders, right?
Right. She was endorsed by Bernie Sanders and the Democratic Socialists of America.
So then there are all these local ballot measures. What are some of the most significant ones that did pass last night?
Well, we can talk about San Francisco first here, and there were five ballot measures that were up in this case, and every one of them passed, Hana. Mm. So that includes Prop A. That's the Embarcadero Seawall Earthquake Safety Bond. That's almost $500 million for that that'll be put forth in a bond.
And then there's Prop C. That was a big one. Now San Francisco will permanently double the money it spends on housing and services for homeless people. They'll raise new funds by taxing the top 300 or so highest grossing businesses in the city. And it looks like it was really helped by what's being called the Benioff boost. Mark Benioff poured millions of dollars into this campaign, and London Breed was against it. And because it didn't pass with a two-thirds majority vote, right, it didn't have to, but it didn't.
Even though it passed pretty strong.
It didn't pass two-thirds. And that may not make a difference on the surface, mm-hmm, but it means it could face legal challenges before it's set to be enacted in January, because there's this legal case in California right now, it's pending, that could invalidate any tax measure for specific purposes, like homelessness, that didn't pass with a two-thirds majority vote. So
they're going to be waiting on that decision then.
Yeah, they're going to be waiting on that decision. They're going to be waiting on maybe legal cases that may come up. So that'll be really interesting to keep an eye on.
Okay, so let's round this out with some local elected officials. We can start with the Oakland mayor's race.
Sure. Well, Mayor Libby Schaaf is going to continue to be mayor, and she won really convincingly over basically a field of many, many candidates who did not have a whole lot of name recognition. I found this pretty interesting, not so much that Mayor Schaaf won, but that she won so easily, because she really is having a lot of difficulty in Oakland right now. There's a major homeless issue going on there, so many encampments on the streets of Oakland, and then also you have these high-profile exits by the pro sports team. Oakland Raiders are going to be leaving for Las Vegas almost immediately. Golden State Warriors are moving over to San San Francisco. So, you know, she is empowered with what looks like a mandate, but I'm curious to see what Libby Schaaf's going to do in the next 4 years, because it seems like there's been a lot of problems that have come while she's been in office.
Right. So let's go over to San Francisco. Five supervisor seats were up for grabs.
Yeah, so five supervisors were elected last night. One of them is Gordon Marr. He's going to represent the West Side, which is District 4. He is going to be rejoined by Catherine Stephanie, who was already the incumbent in District 2 on the North. Matt Haney in District 6 will represent SOMA. Raphael Mandelman in the Mission represents District 8. And Shimon Walton, who used to be the president of the SFUSD School Board, he will lead District 10 on the east side of the city.
Mm-hmm. And something to note, Haney and Marr are both very progressive candidates, and it will be interesting to see what they do for their districts in the city now that they could have a pretty strong progressive majority in the Board of Supervisors. Their wins also mean that their opponents, candidates that were pretty heavily backed by Mayor Breed and a lot of money, have been defeated.
And finally, KLW's license is held by the San Francisco Unified School District. So who are the newest members of the school board?
Well, I can tell you that there are three, and one of them is Allison Collins. She is a parent who makes her voice heard quite a lot. There's also Gabriela Lopez. I was at the candidates forum, and her kid makes her himself known quite a lot. He went up there on stage when there was a candidates forum of many, many candidates, and that was an interesting moment. And there was also Fauga Maliga, who is somebody who used to work right here where KELW is at Burton High School, and he was appointed to the board by London Breed shortly before the election. So him winning election is actually something that did go right for London Breed last night.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Angela Johnston is the election coordinator for KLW News. Ben Trefney is our news director. You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Director Sephora Wuldu celebrates her Eritrean heritage in her first feature film, Life is Fair. That's fair as in cab fare. The film takes place in San Francisco's Tenderloin, which Sephora calls home. She describes the film as a love letter to the TL and casts local residents for the roles. Sephora Wuldu stopped by KLW to discuss how the whole filming process got started.
When I say that it's hard to kind of keep connected with back home, there's like the technical, like, you know, we have WhatsApp and Viber and I can like watch television from Eritrea. There's that connection. But to me, the connection is also about how you live your life in a way that reflects being an informed citizen and a participant in the Eritrean culture as it evolves when you're not there. And do you have a role in it? Like, it's really just figuring out how you leave your mark, if you want to leave a mark in a respectful way. And it's not easy. I would consider myself a writer who has fallen into film. I wrote a short story and I adapted it into a screenplay. And so my first film was a short based off of that. And then my second film was made after my first film got into some festivals and I got into a residency in Egypt. And my second film was produced at a film festival for an exhibition. And after that, I would say I officially began to make films on a more strategic level, and I started writing my current project, Life is Fair, after that film festival, and that was around 2014. Oh, if you ask me where I'm from, Life is Fair is a play on words, and it's also a film that is a bit honest. It's about a cab driver, an immigrant cab driver from Eritrea who's now in San Francisco, and just the way that he's assessing his life so far. And one of the ways that he does kind of internalize and figure out how he feels about where he is for his life to be fair. It is cab fare. He drives around the city a lot. He's kind of a workaholic. And so the film is about how his life, how it has turned out so far, and how he's always in his cab and the things that he sees in the city that allow him to reflect about where he's from through, you know, the front seat of a cab. The film is definitely a love letter to San Francisco, specifically the Tenderloin. I live in the Tenderloin, We shot the film there. I wrote the film there. I edited it there. We did sound at Hyde Street Studios, which is down the street from, you know, where I live in the neighborhood. And to me, the Tenderloin is a place where a lot of immigrants did settle. Back when the city was a little more affordable, there was a lot of people who would come here as soon as they got to the country, and they would find jobs and they would find work, and it was a way to, you know, survive. And the city has gotten so expensive now, people with college degrees don't even come here in the same numbers that they used to, let alone immigrants who just got to the country, you know? So it's kind of a throwback to this era where people like this character. The main character's name is Hylet. And cab drivers and people who worked in service, they did come to San Francisco. They did come to neighborhoods like the Tenderloin to figure it out, you know? And that's a big part of why the film is a love letter to San Francisco, because we used to have this ability as a city to grow, you know, in directions that we weren't always sure we were going to grow in. And San Francisco, I think, is becoming more now a city where you have to have a plan before you get here, and you have to have a plan in case your plan doesn't work. And it's literally a line in the film. I really think that there's magic in cities where you can figure it out and see what happens. So I tried for the film to look like the San Francisco that I know and love and have experienced, you know, earlier, which is a film in a city where you don't know what's going to happen next. The institutions that we shot at or worked with, you know, some of them are no longer there. We shot at Yellow Cab Cooperative. They've gone bankrupt. We shot at the Gangway. We filmed a scene at the Gangway, which was a gay bar on Larkin, which was the oldest gay bar in San Francisco, and that has closed down. We shot at Lafayette Diner. They closed their location. I think they're still in the neighborhood, but the actual location that they were at originally is no longer there. People passed away from the neighborhood, you know, who are in the film, who actually didn't get to see it. So it's nice to look at the film and just see something that is no longer, it's no longer accessible. And it's like a nice little love letter to remember. I used all non-actors for the film. It is a scripted narrative feature-length film, but it's about Eritrea, and we used Eritreans who are in the Bay Area who don't really have a background in theater or acting, but they identified with the script in some capacity. So it was a collaborative process. I wrote the characters. They were open to modifying them to make it, you know, the most accurate and the most honest. But it was still scripted, memorized, we practiced, and we filmed it as a scene that you would see in any other movie. The film is very influenced by an honesty when it comes to asking questions about who you are and where you belong and what you're qualified to feel. It sounds a bit abstract, but for people who are the children of immigrants and who grow up first generation, to me, in my experience, there's a big question of, like, where do you fit into the culture? Not only representing it as, you know, an American or somebody living abroad, but also where do you fit into the home country? Like, are you allowed to have opinions? Are you allowed to contribute to what's happening back home? How do you stay informed when you're not there? So the film is very much an interrogation on that question, like, where do we fit? And I think there's a lot of things that I want to know about and I want to have the ability to care about publicly. So the film is really about just pulling the Band-Aid off. Like, let's figure out what I think I can do and what I think I can't do, and we'll see if I can actually do it.
That's filmmaker Sephora Wuldu talking about her new movie, Life is Fair. You can catch a screening of the film this Thursday, November 8th, at the Museum of the African Diaspora in San Francisco. Go to KELW for all the details. That piece was produced by Tariq Foda.
Yo, the jam was fly. Yo, my, now it's over. My batcha, pals cut so tight. They must catch a taxi cab. Dagnab, why'd they leave me? Stuck in the late night app. Sweating, yet nobody's smiling. Flush crews are piling, staring, thinking what they look like wearing. My gear aside when the yellow cab he sped up because dreads made him think.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba.
Now, let's hear the second installment in our series of stories from the My Life, My Stories project. It's a local nonprofit working to gather wide-reaching oral histories of San Francisco seniors with a larger mission of engaging elders in general. Today, we're bringing you the story of Jose, a senior who fled San Salvador for the U.S. during the Salvadoran Civil War. Though Jose has been granted citizenship since his border crossing, My Life, My Stories founder Brittany Bear has asked we not use his last name because of the contentious current political climate around immigration.
I'm from El Salvador, from San Salvador. When I was still living over there, I was working in my last job in a company, Monsanto. And they took care of business about the agricultural system over there. It was a good job and everything, but then the problems with the government and the guerrilla begins. I remember one night I told the mother of my kids, bring the kids down, and we sleep in the floor. It was too much to bear. So, during too many problems over there, the company closed down business. I knew that it's gonna be impossible to find a job. Everybody begin to come over here. Everybody. My two babies were just little ones. I remember Carlos Eduardo was only 6 months. And Roxana, I guess she already have like 2 years. They got sick. The mother of my kids told me, Araceli, Jose, we have to go to the hospital. I worry about my girl. So we went. That night, we find a lot of people over there dressing up from the guerrillas. And they told us, you know, go back. Whatever you do, do it tomorrow. So after I see that, and Monsanto leaves without a job, I talk to her and say, listen, I'm going to the U.S. I'm going to try to go over there. And then I came like everybody else was coming in those days. I just grabbed some money and I pay a pollero, the one who crossed with the border. And the guy was so afraid to come to cross the border with us that he leave us in Mexico in one of those hotels at the border. The place where we were, it wasn't a big river, it was a little creek. You know, kids were playing over there. And then I saw people crossing, and they called me, come, and I followed them. And we crossed the river. People were watching us, saying, yeah, go, yeah. At the other side, I managed to find some people, and he said, I got connections, you know, I can get you over there to Los Angeles. Oh, good. We reached Los Angeles about 4 o'clock in the morning. And I remember they just opened the door for the car and they say, okay, you are in the US, good luck. And I found a lot of friends over there because like I learned since the beginning of the years that somebody is renting a big apartment, 2 rooms apartment, but they live like tacos. When you open the door, you have to crawl because there's one sleeping here, or here, you know, a lot of people. I don't want to be over there in Los Angeles. I said, no, I want to go to San Francisco. And then they say, okay, listen. We have plans for my mother. She wants us to take her to San Francisco. And you go to San Francisco. So you go with us and you stay over there. Oh, perfect. Yes. And that's the way I came to went to Los Angeles and from Los Angeles to San Francisco.
After Jose reached San Francisco, he found work at a Pioneer Chicken in the Mission. He eventually became a manager of multiple stores. That story was part of the project My Life, My Stories, edited by KALW's Mary Franklin Harvin. We're hearing pieces from the project all week here on Cross Currents, and there's a free live event with My Life, My Stories this Sunday, November 11th at 7 o'clock. Seniors will share their memories of what brought them to San Francisco. That's at Adobe Books in the Mission. You can hear all the stories in that series on our website, or better yet, subscribe to the Cross Currents podcast. You can do that at KALW.org. The Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Sarah Coast, Maggie McKay, Kevin McLean, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Truk Nguyen, and Eli Wirtschafter. Our engineers are Tariq Foda, James Rollins, and Gabe Graben. Shirin Adil is our content manager. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Paper Cuts from San Francisco. They're playing at the Chapel in the City tomorrow night. Show starts at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.